Welcome to Off the Cut, a podcast where we talk about building, making,
and answering all of your questions.
I'm Eric from Spensley Design Co.
And I'm Zach from Zach Builds. If you have a question that you would like us to answer on air, you can send it to offthecutpodcast@gmail.com.
You can find both of us on YouTube, Instagram, and unfortunately, because we have to keep up with kids, you can find us on TikTok too.
All right, now let's get into the show.
Howdy, everyone, and welcome to Off the Cut. What is that? There's like syrup on the bottom of my desk or something.
Oh, no. That's like being back in like high school when you touch something gross on the desk and you're afraid to look what it is.
I thought it was a Green Suitors podcast at first, but
well, smell it. Does it smell like poo? Because
nope.
Okay. Well, it can't be the Green Suitors podcast.
Welcome to Off the Gut episode 76. We're up in Toronto. Today is known as Monday, July 31st, 2023. That's right, folks. Grandma's coming into town on our typical Tuesday recording day. So unlike mediocre podcasts like the Green Suitors, we care about our audience and we adjust our schedules accordingly. So we're recording today on Monday. Mm-hmm. But anyway, here in Ohio, today is respectfully oh my God.
It's okay. Reset. Quick. Take a quick breath. Crack a bubbly.
All right. Here we go.
And then let's take it from the top.
But here in Ohio, today is respectfully dedicated to the food of the day. Avocados.
Oh yeah, that's the avocado is the whole reason that millennials can't afford homes, right?
Wasn't there like a CNN article about that? It was avocado toast.
It was avocado toast. Yeah, it's just so damn enticing. I spent my entire down payment on avocado toast.
Right. Now I feel like avocados are a divisive food. People swear by them, and some people think they're absolutely disgusting.
I'm firmly in the swear by them category. I love a good avocado, and especially guacamole. I mean, you tell me you don't like guacamole, I will slap you in the face.
So, I love guacamole, so I don't need to worry about getting slapped in the face.
Good.
But the problem with guacamole is you can have a bad guacamole, like pretty easily. Like if you don't season it right,
it's
awful.
It needs, from my perspective, you need a lot of garlic in it.
Oh, baby. Yeah. And some diced up jalapenos in there and some onions. Some red onions.
Oh, yeah. Now you're talking my language.
I'm all about the simplicity. Just the avocado, salt, pepper, a little bit of olive oil.
That's okay.
Olive oil. Is that a typical ingredient?
Keeps it from browning.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. What? That just changed my guac game. Damn.
I was going to say, this is my biggest complaint with guacamole is, you know, you make it sits out for 5 minutes and it looks like shoe leather.
It's true. You ever have a party and you make guacamole for it? You're like, everybody eat the guacamole because it's not going to keep. It's like, you have to like foist it on people. It's like, finish it because it can't go in the fridge.
So it says that olive oil not only enhances the flavor of avocados, but also adds a touch of creaminess.
Okay.
Creaminess.
I could believe that.
Okay. Oh, tomatoes to and guac.
Oh, that's good too. Yeah. Sophie used to do this thing with, so here's the classic conundrum. You want to make your avocado toast, you slice an avocado in half. And you use half of it, but then you have the other half, and you can't, obviously, it's going to go to hell the second leave it there, right? So she used to take a bowl of water and put it, like, inside down in the water, and that would preserve it.
Isn't there some weird trick like that you do? You're, like, supposed to keep the side that you want to keep, you also, like, keep, like, the little nut pit thingy in it?
Yeah. I think it seals it up and keeps it from oxidizing or whatever it is.
Is it just less surface area?
I think less surface area, if I had to guess.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah there's a lot of
some avocados.
I know, right? Do you think they have avocado oil? Do you think you could ever treat like a table? Do you think you could make like a Odie's oil but with avocado oil?
I don't know. So like all of these different oils, like I'm assuming you can't just take olive oil and put it on a table, right? I don't think it like cures. Like I think it like goes rotten.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good point. So you think there's something special about linseed oil where it like,
I don't know,
where it cures and becomes harder?
Yeah.
Because that's what a lot of these natural finishes are based on, right?
So, what?
I think whenever you use the oil from the seed versus the oil from the actual fruit, it's different.
Oh. Okay. I mean, it's that I will believe you forever, and I will repeat that to other people like it was my own idea. So you better be right about that, Derek.
So this highly, I blanked on the word. It's a website that inspires tons of confidence. It's called ablossominglife.com.
Okay.
Says that you can use olive oil, avocado oil, and coconut oil on furniture.
Really?
I don't believe that.
No. Well, I've had this idea in my head for a long time to do like a shootout video of like different finishes. I think I've talked about it on the podcast. So I was going to put I was going to treat boards and then put them in my dishwasher and see what happens. Yeah. So maybe I'll add some of these if I ever get around to making that video. Maybe I'll add some of these like, you know, kind of far out there ones.
What if you did an entire video all about can you put this oil on your wood? Avocado oil, mineral oil, like all everything that you would see in your kitchen, like canola oil, like all this kind of stuff. Like,
yeah. I mean, I guess at the end of the day, what do you really need? You need, like, the oil is a natural water repellent. So as long as it stays suspended in the wood.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, oil doesn't really dry out, so.
But it weirds me out that, like, if you get a thing of olive oil, mm-hmm. if you look at the cap or the bottom of it, it has an expiration date, which leads mm-hmm. me to believe that if you rub olive oil all over your wood,
it's going to expire on there?
Right.
Yeah, but maybe. So is it an actual expiration date or is it a best before date? Because best before is kind of, yeah.
Oh, it does expire. It changes the flavor for sure.
Okay. Changes the flavor, yes. Yeah. But
so something's happening chemically when it expires.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense.
Can olive oil go rotten? Yes, it can go rancid, which may give it a bitter or sour smell, a bit like crayons or silly putty.
Okay. I can't say I have a very good reference point for what either of those things taste like, but sure, I'll believe you.
Oh, you weren't a kid that ate crayons?
No, sir. No, sir.
We had a kid that I grew up with. His name... the name's irrelevant because it slipped my mind. We'll just call him, I don't know, what name you want.
Frank.
His name was Frank.
Okay.
Frank Johnson was his name. And he would eat crayons up until about middle school. But here's the kicker. He would only eat the white crayons.
Oh.
So like he would go around to people's desks. And like, you know, when you had the little like metal desk thingy and you put your shit underneath it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
There
yeah.
we go. And he would like go into people's desks and like get their like 64, 128 box of crayons and just pluck out the white ones. Not a white crayon to be found in the classroom.
Okay. Now I need to do a deep dive on this because now I'm curious. Was it a flavor thing or was it like a tooth whitening thing? Like he didn't want to have like flecks of purple crayon in his teeth all day.
I didn't even think about that. That makes a lot of sense, right? Because if you eat like a black or purple crayon, you're going to have a bunch of junk in your teeth. If you eat a white crayon, like.
Yeah, it's actually probably better at the end of the day.
Wow.
Okay, and then my second follow-up question is, did he have shame about it? Like, was this like a thing where he would like skulk around behind the scenes and steal crayons? Or was it like a, haha, got you, I stole your white crayon?
There was definitely no shame. It would be like, it'd be one of those things like, you know, at the beginning of the year, they'd be like, my name's Eric. It starts with E. Elephant also starts with E. Like, you have to do some like dumb, like, like icebreaker thing. So it'd always be like, you know, tell a fun fact about yourself. And this guy would, he was a weird kid for sure. He'd always go,
I'm getting that.
He'd always go, my name is Frank Johnson and I eat white crayons.
Okay.
And you're just like, all right, man, you're a psychopath. Yeah.
So he made it like part of his character.
Yeah. But like, how do you grow out of that? Like, do you just one day you decide like, you know, Frank Johnson, I got to come up with a new fun fact. That's not crayons.
Yeah. Anymore. I mean, I guess what do you graduate to? You start eating like white markers or white paints.
So that's an interesting concept you bring up. Like, as you age, crayons, you kind of age yourself out of crayons, right?
I mean, you can't be an adult man and like sit down at a table and pull out a thing of crayons and just start chowing down on them.
Can you imagine you go to like get a home mortgage?
Yeah.
You just pull out a crayon.
Hang on, I need a snack.
You get a snack first. You're like, hold on, I'm hungry. You bring out that white crayon and then you pull out the dark blue crayon and you sign your home mortgage with the crayon.
And then what do you do with that situation? Do you eat the white crayon and then be like, can I throw the other 19 of these crayons out in your garbage everywhere you go?
I wonder if you can get an entire box of white crayons.
Oh, I bet you can. I bet you can.
You think his dad ate all the red crayons and was disappointed his son only ate white crayons?
Maybe.
It'd be a family thing. Okay, no, website son of mine. Here. SSWW. This is not sponsored, by the way. You can get a box of Crayola white crayons, 12 of them, for $2.72. That's a good snack.
That's cheaper than I would have thought. Oh, okay, this reminded me of a story from my childhood.
Oh, please share.
when I was a little kid, I bought like a thing of pencil crayons for color books or whatever, you know.
Yeah,
I
was, yeah,
like,
yeah.
8 years old or something like that. And the orange pencil crayon didn't have the thing of lead in it. And it was just hollow. And my mom was like, oh, that's kind of like, well, we already swore. So she was like, oh, that's kind of bullshit. You should phone Crayola. Like, they have their number right on the back of it. They'll probably send you new kit of crayons.
Sure.
I was like, okay. So I did that whole rigmarole thing. I waited like 3 or 4 months. And in like a padded envelope, they sent me a single pencil crayon.
You're kidding me.
No. So this, you know, and then at that moment as a kid, I was like, you know what? When I'm 30 years old, I'm going to start a podcast just so I can tell everybody about this to spite Crayola.
Oh, it's so a long play.
Right, yeah, exactly. Exactly.
It's what my great, great grandmother always told me, that if you eat crayons, you have to start a podcast. And then everybody about it to get back at Crayola.
That's right. That's right.
Think they eat the green ones over there at Green Sitters?
Oh, they probably do.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. What's that? It's like, do they have a Festool green in Crayola?
Oh, yeah, they've got to have some pretty close, some sort of like lime green color.
Yeah, I bet. Have you ever thought about throwing a company under the bus in one of your YouTube videos?
Oh, I have.
Yeah. Oh,
I have not done it. I've thought about it. I've indirectly done it.
Yeah, I mean, I've done it, like, jokingly, but I've never actually, you know, because, like, hypothetically, it would probably anger, like, okay, so when I went to Workbench Conference, I was pretty ticked off at Air Canada. Imagine like, the next, like, 6 YouTube videos I made, I was like, don't fly Air Canada. And that was just my sign-off for everything.
See, okay, think about it in, let's say you're gonna, I don't know, you and I'm making this up, you enjoy watching Frank Johnson makes swimming pool videos on YouTube. I'm trying to make up something ridiculous. You know, you're not a big swimming pool enthusiast. You have no plans of ever building a swimming pool, but you think the stuff that Frank does on YouTube is interesting. If during one episode or one video, he's like, man, I had this, you know, experience with Air Canada. You know, they really dicked me over. You know, I'm mad about that. You'd be like, ah, man, Frank, I get it. But if 5, 6 episodes went back and he just kept going on about Air Canada, you'd be like, dude, shut the hell up. Like, no one cares.
It wouldn't be like a rant thing. It would just be like a sign off to every video. Be like, don't, and remember, don't fly Air Canada. See you guys in the next
video. That would be funny. Or if you're just like, all right, so I started 3D printing this, and then I was don't fly Air Canada. I have ran out of filament. Like, that'd be funny. Like,
right.
Maybe I think you could get some laughs for that. Yeah, I think that would be a much better way than like going on some whole diatribe about how Air Canada screwed you over.
Exactly. It would just be little subtle jabs here and there.
But let's be real, Zach. Air Canada doesn't give a shit what you put on your YouTube channel.
That's true. It's true. I'm sure they don't. But it would just make me feel better. That's fair. At least now I've told all the listeners. So
yeah. Yeah. So for any new listeners, give us a 45-second overview of what happened so they can be your soapbox.
Okay. I was late for my flight, and Air Canada wouldn't let me board even though I could board. Okay, my bad. I asked them, so I bought a new ticket. I was like, is this me missing this first one going to cancel my return ticket? They said no. So I buy a one-way ticket to Atlanta, go to Atlanta, have the conference, get notifications saying get ready to check into your flight, get to the Atlanta airport. They say, hey, you missed your first flight, so we canceled your second flight.
Right.
And this was on the tail end of a snowstorm in Canada, so there was no flights for the next 2 days back to Toronto. So I ended up having to drive back to Toronto from Atlanta.
So it's me, Zach, Scott Walsh, and Suman are hanging out in the airport, and we're like, what the hell are we gonna do? Like, and I was like, sorry guys, I gotta go. Like, I think my flight was the first one to have to go.
I think so.
And then you're like, I might have to drive. I'm like, no way this guy's gonna drive. And then I get my first connection. Or no, I had a direct flight. I land in Columbus and Miranda picks me up. She goes, man, I feel bad for Zach. I'm like, yeah, I know. I don't even know what he's gonna do. And she's like, No, he's driving. I was like, what? So it was like, what, like a 12-hour drive or something?
16 hours, I think. It was funny. I was driving through Ohio at like probably like 11 p.m., 10:45. I was like, maybe I should crash on Eric's couch. I was like, no, I'm gonna push through.
It probably would have been more out of the way because you probably drove through Dayton, which is like the west side of Ohio.
Yes. If memory serves me, that's correct.
Yeah,
because then it went up through Detroit and then across.
Yeah. So it would have added like at least an hour, hour and a half if you did it that way.
Yeah, exactly.
But I'm sure you got some good podcasting in on there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I crushed a lot of YouTube. You know what? If you're ever on a really long road trip and you need to stay awake, watch YouTube videos. Like, don't actually watch them, clearly. You have to, like, pay attention to the road. But, like, play them and just, like, put your phone, like, beside you or whatever. Because they're very high energy and something's always happening.
Right.
Like, you know how you cut together YouTube videos. There's always something going on. So it's, like, it's very engaging.
Right.
I would alternate between YouTube videos, then, like, Nickelback for a little bit. And then, yeah. And then, oh, God. I don't even know what I did for most of that trip, but it was not pretty.
How many coffees did you go through?
Oh, quite a few. Quite a few. I couldn't even count, honestly.
Oh, that sounds awful. But in all fairness, the detail, excuse me, that you left out, you said you arrived, you missed your flight. In all fairness, you were there for your flight.
That's true.
They made up some BS rule that they're like, oh, but if you have to be here at least 2 hours for an international flight.
Correct. It was really egregious, too, because like I think it was like an 8:30 flight, or no, it was a 9 o'clock flight. I got to the airport at like 8:15 or something like that. And I was like, oh, there's no line for security. Like, and customs is on the other side. So I think I got this. Like, I had to do is get my ticket and go to the gate.
Right.
And they're like, no. I was like, but I could make it. They were like, well, we have a rule that you have to be here an hour and a half before any international flight. But I was like, but I could make it.
Right. And the idea was that, like, they wanted to put your name on the manifest. The manifest was already, like, you know, settled or whatever, but.
Yeah, maybe. Who the hell knows?
Somebody was just mad.
Somebody was mad because I had another gate agent come up to me and they're like, hey, what that gate agent did to you, that was bullshit. She didn't have to do that. She could have let you get on that flight. And it's like, I appreciate you telling me that, but also don't tell me that.
Right, right. It's like, okay, if you're going to tell me that, maybe you're like, hey, go through this back door. You know, there's not security.
Yeah, exactly.
It says emergency exit will, or emergency alarm will sound. It won't. Just go through that door. You're good.
Yeah. Have you flown international anywhere lately?
No.
So I was saying on the last podcast, I went down to Boston last weekend.
Yeah.
And I flew through security on both sides. Like, literally just got my boarding pass, walked to security. There was no line.
Yeah.
Check through, and then, like, I'm one of these guys who's, like, thought you had to be at the airport, like, 3 hours before any international flight. But this is, this quick.
There's so many different, like, security clearances. You have, like, the eye scanny thing. You got the pre-check. Yeah. You got some. Yeah. They're, like, five different ones. I'm convinced that everybody thinks that those are faster now. And so now no one's in the regular security clearance.
Dude. 100%. Because so we went, so it was a big group of us. We went for a bachelor party. Right. And there was like three or four guys in the group had like the Nexus and the TSA pre-check and the stuff. And they're like, you know, they're making a deal about it. They're like, see you guys on the other side. We're going to go through our own security line over here. And all the guys who didn't have the pre-check or whatever beat them all through. It was actually slower to have the pre-check.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's pretty funny.
I know it's nice that you don't have to take off your clothes when you go through it and stuff like that. But
dude, I didn't even have to take off my clothes.
It depends which airport you go to, right?
It really does. Logan International Airport in Boston, they got loose security. They don't give a they do not give a shit.
They don't care. They're like, you get, it's like Oprah, you get a car.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, but you know what they did have that I've never seen before? They had a gauntlet that you had to run. So they had a drug or bomb sniffing dog that would pace back and forth. And then you just had to walk like right past the dog. Yeah. If the dog does anything or freaks out, I guess they pull you aside and give you a cavity search. But,
I hope so. Dude, I always find it funny. Like, I have nothing to be worried about when I go past, like, the drug-sniffing dogs or whatever. But I get so anxious every time. I'm like,
me too.
Oh, what if you know, somebody slipped something in when I wasn't looking?
I know. And,
like,
I know.
I'm going to go to jail. Like, it gives me so much anxiety. Same with taking, like, a drug test for, like, a job interview. I get so anxious. I'm like, oh, I got to pee in this cup. What if they find something? I'm like, Eric, you're not going to find anything.
Yeah. Do you think, what percentage of jobs do you think drug test you?
Here, every job I've ever done does.
I think it depends. Application?
Any, like, corporate job, yeah.
I think it depends on what level you are at in the.
Like,
oh,
so you think, like, if you're the higher you get,
you're probably not getting drug tested.
Right.
Mm-hmm,
I mean, what do they care if you do a little drugs on the weekend?
Right. I mean, that's your own business. Anyways.
It doesn't affect my work performance. Like, yeah, so exactly. What if I smoke crystal meth? It's on Saturday. It's out of my system by Monday.
It actually makes me better at my job.
Microdosing crystal meth.
Pretty sure they call that Adderall.
Well, I found a way for you to get in your Don't Fly Air Canada agenda.
Okay.
We make it the title of the show.
Oh, yeah, there we go. The one where they don't fly Air Canada.
It's not bad, huh? Mm-hmm. It's not bad. Well, speaking of people who hate Air Canada.
Oh, yeah, let's do it.
We've got new patrons this week.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. So these people are joining us in the fight against the Green Suitors podcast. Only you and Air Canada. Only you can prevent those two horrible corporations from staying alive. So new this week, we've got our Odie's Oil fans, also known as our certified turds.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a dentist, not dentist.
Okay.
Dentist Stilger. What do you think?
D-E-N-N-I-S-T?
No, sorry. Not dentist. God, this is good podcasting. Dennis.
Okay, okay, Dennis. Just regular Dennis. I swear I heard a T there at the end.
No, I probably just, it's my Ohio accent. Stilger?
I'm going to say Stilger.
Stilger?
Stilger. I don't know, it rolls off the tongue a little bit better.
That sounds like a food company, you know?
Like a coffee company. It's like Folgers.
Oh, Folger. Okay.
Maybe
Stilger. I wonder what Dennis does. You think he's in the food industry?
No, I think he's... I picture Dennis working with metal. I think he's like a civil engineer or something like that. That's my guess.
An architect.
Yeah, yeah. What do you say?
Fishmonger.
Fishmonger.
Well, Dennis, thanks for jumping aboard. You're gonna get access to all kinds of stuff. Or no, the way we're saying it now, he's unlocking.
Oh.
Access. He's unlocking the after show and the Discord server and all kinds of cool stuff. Premium content. OnlyFans.
Yeah, that's right. We should do it OnlyFans, but like obviously nothing sexual because we're prudes, but.
I do foot stuff.
Yeah, I do foot stuff.
I wouldn't mind.
Yeah.
Being honest. We also have a rigid fan. Ooh. And he's in our live chat tonight, or the live stream chat thing, whatever the hell you want to call it. Ron Rutherford?
Rutherford?
But R-E-T-H.
Oh,
Rutherford.
Yeah, okay. Rutherford. Rutherford. Yeah.
Rutherford. That's a tough thing for me to say for some reason.
Yeah,
at me too. Willow Creek Woodshop.
What is up? Oh, yeah, I see the live chat right there. Awesome.
Heck yeah. Ron, we appreciate it. Dennis, Dennist, we appreciate it. We've also got our returning top-tier patrons that are...
Sure do.
Our five-star generals in the fight against the Green Suitors podcast. We've got, I'm going to start from the bottom this time. Scott Eastman, Eastie's Woodshop. Jason Price at Priceless Pro Designs. Duvall, Luke Schmidt, Dadu, and Brooke Appler at Grizzly Bear Woodworks. And we want to give a sincere apology because Wes still must be going through the absolute ringer because he signed up like two or three more times for Patreon again.
Oh, no, poor Wes.
I'm so sorry, dude. If you're still having identity theft issues, Wes Willard is back and he's loving every second of it as our top tier power caulker, as we like to call him.
Yes, sir.
Oh, well, you guys know what the deal is with Patreon. It supports us. It's the only way we make marginal amount of money on this, so we don't have to blast you with obnoxious ads during podcasts. But you know, it is what it is. Zach, what are you up to this week? Anything exciting?
I just wrapped that project. My video editor's on vacation, so I had to edit my last video by myself, and it just reminded me how much I don't really enjoy a lot of the parts of editing videos. So I finally sent that video off for brand approval, and I spent some time in Fusion today designing my next couple projects, and I also 3D printed myself a little teleprompter today.
Oh, hell yeah! Look at that!
Yeah, so it just, here, I'm recording on the camera right now, but it just kind of slides over the lens, and you put your phone in there, and then you put a little sheet of reflective acrylic in there, and you can read off your phone. So,
oh, dude, that is way better than the setup that I have is...
It probably looks massive.
It's like the size of a box of boots. It's too big.
Is it this?
Pretty much. Yeah. That's too big.
Yeah. This is the glide gear. A lot of people use this, but I hate it. It's horrible because it's so big. I never use it.
Right.
Yeah. So pretty pumped on this. I had to modify it. So I spent the morning kind of just, this is somebody else's design. It was on one of those like 3D printing file sharing websites. So I got it, and then I started tinkering with the design a little bit to make it work with my camera.
Now, do you have it set so like it clips into your lens, like how that like the anti-glare hood thing clips in, where it's like a 90-degree turn?
Well, no, it doesn't actually like lock in. It just kind of slides over the top. I don't know if that's all black, so you probably can't see it very clearly.
Oh, I see. There's a little rim on the top of it.
Yeah, there's like a threading on the out, not a threading, but there's like a notch on the outside of my lens. So this just clicks into it essentially.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
So I still need to, I'm writing this down right now. I still need to send you my username and password for that Fusion 360 class.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I started 3D modeling some woodworking projects today. So I'd like to see what his tips are specifically for woodworking.
Yeah, I think it may be helpful. I mean, at the very least, even if you're like, yeah, I know that, you might be like, oh, that's a helpful tip.
Yeah, for sure.
Send Zach Fusion password.
Isn't that about 90% of YouTube? I know that. Oh, that's helpful.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, basically. Exactly.
But so how much did that cost you if you had to estimate, like, filament-wise? Like, $3?
Oh, God. Change. $3. Yeah. Yeah. Man. Three would be like the high end.
So how much is the acrylic glass going to cost to throw in there?
So I have some acrylic. So the person who made the original design for this, they said that you could use any like acrylic in there and it would work. So you could just use clear acrylic and it would be enough to actually see the text on your phone.
Really?
So I have some in the shop that I bought for like $12, but I did buy some special like one-way mirror
right
stuff that's like purpose designed for this because I thought it would work a little bit better. I think that was like $30 or something like that for a 12-inch by 12-inch sheet. I probably only need like a fifth of it or something.
Right. So you can make four of those. So call it $6 or something.
Yeah.
So all in, you're less than $10 a piece.
Yeah.
Damn.
And yeah. It was funny. So I was talking with Scott Walsh earlier today about I was showing him. I was like, hey, I 3D printed this teleprompter. He's like, oh, yeah, I just ordered this one from a company called Parrot. It's called a Padcaster. It's pretty popular.
It sounds familiar, that brand.
Yeah, it's pretty popular. And I was going to buy it. They have like a new pro version that's coming out. And I was going to buy it. But they're doing a Kickstarter, which I find really annoying because when you buy something on Kickstarter, you have no idea when you're actually going to get it.
Yeah.
And it was like $129, I think. And Derek's got it up on screen there. I think that's the original version, Derek. And there's like a newer one that's a little bit better coming out. But honestly, this has all the features that does. And, you know, I was able to get it on time and for about like a tenth of the price.
Maybe it's me and my lack of knowledge with teleprompters, but like, as long as I have something that goes around my camera and holds my phone, other than that, I don't really need anything else.
No, neither do I. And I don't know. So how much of your videos do you use a teleprompter for?
I'll typically do them for ad reads, obviously. So I can just write down exactly what I want to say. A lot of times I'll actually send the ad read script to the company, be like, here's what I'm going to say. Do you want me to say something different?
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
Because it saves so much time. Yeah. And then I'll just read it word for word to make sure that I'm going off the script and I don't mess up. Yeah. But if I'm doing like talking head videos, well, it'll be like a topical video or something like that. I will use the teleprompter for the entire thing.
Right.
But if it's kind of like I'm working on a project, I'm like, all right, I just finished like wrapping this up. I'm like, I'm kind of struggling. What I think I'm going to do next? Like, I'm thinking about doing this. No, I don't teleprompt that. That's just like stream of consciousness.
Yeah, same. I'm pretty much the same. A lot of time for intros and outros. Well, I used to use it a lot more. I think for like the last 3 or 4 months, I haven't used it. But then I was trying to record the outro for this last video I did. And I was just like, I had like a script of things that I wanted to say and I kept messing it up. I kept getting angry. I was like, stop being an idiot. You have a teleprompter right over there. Like set it up and use it. And so I was using it and I was like, this thing sucks. So that's what got me on the course of like 3D printing this one, a much more compact one.
And but you can just throw that in a drawer. And then when you need it, boop, pop it off.
Exactly. I'm thinking I might even just like clip this on the outside of my camera bag or something like that. And just like, yeah.
So see, that's smart.
Yeah, I really hate this big one because it's just a pain to set up. Like, I bought a tablet to be the screen on the big one.
Ooh.
And so it's like, I literally own this tablet that was like $300 or something like that, only for that. It's like, and now I'm just going to sell it. And now I don't have to worry about keeping the tablet charged. I can, like, I always have my phone on me. Yeah. So, yeah.
I just throw the phone on. See, mine packs in like this little bag thing here.
Yeah, mine too, I think.
But it's still a pain in the ass to put it in there.
Yeah. You got to, like, you have to, like, fold it in on itself and then pack it away in the thing. And then I'm sure you put that away in your closet when you're not using it. And it's just, it's a lot of steps.
I put it in my desk drawer and it barely fits in there. It's like,
nice. Yeah.
I'm trying to make things easier on myself. Like,
yeah,
you know, that's kind of the thing I've got. Exactly. More streamlined. That's the thing I've realized within, you know, over the years of creating videos. Like, let's be real, Zach. There gets to a point where what you're making is good enough. Like, could I buy all sorts of lighting and, like, perfectly light every shot and bring out, like, a white balance card every single time I take a shot? Absolutely, I could.
Sure.
But is it really making that big of a difference? No.
I don't think so.
Not for the content we make.
I'll be, you know, if any listeners watch my latest video that's probably going to come out a week from now, let me know if you hear any differences, because I eliminated my big, so I have the same Yeti mic that you do.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't really like using it. Like, and so I just hooked up the same lavalier mic that I use when I'm in the shop, and I just recorded off of that straight into the computer for all my voiceovers.
Oh.
And that way, you know, like, I'm not leaning forward. I'm just, like, lean back in my chair, like, reading a script off the screen. It was a much nicer experience, and I banged out my voiceovers way faster.
Oh, see? Are you using the same mic you're using now where you have on the little stand?
Well, I don't think I even use this. I think I just, like, clipped my lavalier. This is strictly for show for the podcast.
It looks good, though.
I know, right?
But yeah, you have to streamline things. Make it easier on yourself. Like, stop doing all the stuff that nobody really cares about.
Exactly. And it's like, it's like, okay. And you know what? I think in the case of the microphone thing, it might even make it a little better, because there was, like, a difference when I would switch from talking to the camera
right.
And then when I would go to voiceover, you could hear a difference. It was like one microphone didn't sound the same as the other. So now it's going to be, like, completely consistent across the board. And I think it might actually make for a better experience for the listener, watcher.
So as a viewer, I can tell you, because I'm a content creator, I was like, oh, he's using his, you know, voiceover mic. Oh, he's using his lav mic. But I didn't care. It sounded fine. Yeah. And to the average viewer, they don't care at all. As long as, if it's easier on you, do whatever's easier.
Yeah. I think that's,
As long as you have good quality audio. Now, if it sounds like you're underwater in a potato, like, no.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. Well, I mean, if it sounded like I was underwater in a potato, like, then my A-roll would have sounded like it was,
right,
you know, underwater in a potato. So I would have had bigger problems.
Right.
Yeah.
So is this going to be the first video that you've done working with our agent, Mark?
No, this is something I actually negotiated before signing with Mark.
Okay.
Yeah. I think my first video with Mark is scheduled for, like, early September.
Nice.
We'll see if I get anything for August.
Nice. Yeah. Was it above the rate that you had been charging? Were you like, damn it?
Yeah, it was about 4x what I was charging
before. Right. I told you.
Yeah.
And you're like, really? I could have been asking for that amount of money the whole time?
Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's funny. Oh, well, I am starting to work on a new project.
Okay.
And I genuinely want to, and Derek, I want to get your feedback on this too. So I think I mentioned it in the after show. I think I slightly mentioned it in the after show. About a year and a half ago, I did that coffee table that I, like, carved all the crazy stuff into it and then wanted to basically flood it with epoxy. Long story short, I got crazy bubbles. Yeah, I want to redeem myself. Mm. Now, I haven't started on it because I'm really mentally trying to map myself through how to do it without messing it up. So I want to hear, Zach, how would you physically go about making this project?
Okay. Let me think about this for a second. So, big slab of wood.
Yeah.
And you've carved things in it.
Yeah.
Whatever. What did you do last time? You put it face up in the thing?
I put it face up and used a bunch of silicone and a boatload of double-sided tape, which if you've used double-sided tape before, it's strong, like carpet tape, right?
Yeah.
Then I put it into a big epoxy mold that was way oversized, and I poured deep pour epoxy over it, like several gallons. Everything was going great. Mm-hmm. I figured once it cured, I could just cut off the edges, you know, shape it, and it'd be nice. Problem with, as you can imagine, buoyancy of wood is much stronger than an entire roll of carpet tape and silicone. So it floated. And in panic, I was like, I'm not going to waste $1,000 of epoxy. I'm going to like flip this thing over. But now there's all of the, you know, all those undulations from the carving. There's tons of air pockets in there.
Right. Okay. Yes.
So that was the issue.
Okay. So could you make, so what are you thinking for a form? Are you just going to do like a melamine box?
Yeah.
So what about if you screwed from the bottom of the melamine box up into the tabletop to suck it down to the bottom and then pour the epoxy over top of that?
That was one consideration that I had.
Okay.
Definitely.
That was my first thought.
Okay.
I'm trying to think how else. I feel like we brainstormed this closer to when it happened. There was another solution that we came up with at the time.
So here's the one. My only concern is like, sure, screws sound like a great idea,
mm-hmm.
but are they strong enough?
Well, it depends how many you use, I suppose, right?
Yeah. Right. And my concern is like trying to like, if I've got some deep carves in there, right? Trying to go, okay, I should aim the screw in here. And I go, damn it. I just screwed through the table.
Yeah. Well, let me ask. So how thick is this top?
So I think I'm going to get 8/4.
Okay.
And then plane it down to roughly maybe 1.5 inches.
Mm-hmm.
So it gives me the ability to get some, you know, pretty good curves, good like divots in there and whatnot.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think like you would have to math it out kind of, you know, like if you're like, okay, the biggest carve is going to be 3/4 inch. The melamine's 5/8.
Right.
So you do 5/8. So you say, okay, I'll use 1.25 inch screws. And
yeah.
Then I know they won't come through anywhere. And then also you could kind of like map it out with wherever the legs on the table are going to go. Right.
And then the screw
holes are covered once you attach the legs. Or, you know, you could get really fancy. And I don't know if you're going to do threaded inserts or something like that for the table legs, then you could use those threaded inserts to attach it to the form.
Yeah. I like that idea. But then my only concern with that is, okay, if the screws break or like they give up holding power, I'm trying to eliminate any failure points.
Yeah.
So I think in that strategy, the screws are the failure point.
Yeah.
Okay. The other thing I was thinking of is when I basically pour just a boatload of epoxy over the wood slab, I'm basically dipping it. Yeah. And by doing that, I'm creating like a really thick border around the whole thing,
mm-hmm.
which I don't know if it's necessarily the exact look I want to go for.
Okay.
So my other thought would be to make a melamine form, then put some of those like painter's pyramids on the bottom. So I'm basically elevating the table off the form. And then I'd, I pour multiple thin layers of epoxy and basically just let it drip off. So it's just like shallowly coating the whole thing, but then in the like the carved areas, it really fills up the epoxy. What are your thoughts about that?
So in that scenario, you have the carved side facing down or the carved side facing up?
I think I would have to start carved side facing down, coat what it effectively is the bottom of the table with epoxy, let that harden, then flip it over on painter's pyramids again, and then flood the top and let it all drip down the side.
How would you then prevent it from going up again, though?
Because it'll be on painter's pyramid, so any extra, it will just like hang out at the bottom.
I think I understand. But then, okay, so you don't want to have, you want to have like a very thin coating on the side?
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
Oh, okay, okay. Interesting.
I mean, I'm going to waste a boatload of epoxy.
Yeah.
Doing it that way.
It's not, but then, okay, so then up on the top, you're also not going to have a very thick coating on the top, which you're okay with?
I think I would have to like build up layers of it. Basically, do a thin layer and basically paint the entire surface so that it seals all the bubbles.
Yeah.
Then do another coat of epoxy that fills up all the voids. But that's just going to barely go over some of those ridges.
Yeah.
And then I almost have to do like another like flood coat of like tabletop epoxy to give it like an eighth inch coating or something like that.
Yes. My only concern with that, and I think that if you're trying to get like a nice like thin coating of epoxy on it, that might be the best way to do it. My only concern with something like that is that you might end up with some like weird drips and stuff on the underside.
I know.
Which you could definitely sand out. Like there's ways to deal with that.
Right.
It's
a more complex project than you think.
It is. Yeah. I'm trying to think like.
Is that one, it's just like when the epoxy is moderately set up, you just go with a towel and kind of just wipe it off the bottom?
Yeah, maybe. I always get so worried about doing stuff like that, though, because I'm like, oh, I'm going to touch it with my thumb, and I'm going to leave a little thumbprint somewhere that'll always be in there.
Because this is something I haven't seen anybody else try that I'm aware
of. Yeah. Yeah. I always thought the intention with this project was to have like a pretty thick layer of epoxy on the top so that there was like extra depth to all the carves in it.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know what I'm after.
The nice thing about doing it this way that you're talking about is if you wanted to, you could also do like a contrasting, like you could fill the carve with like a different color, something like that if you wanted to.
Almost fill it with like blue epoxy and then coat it with clear on the top.
Yeah.
Or like you could do rivers or something.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know,
obviously. Yeah, it might be a little overdone.
There's going to be boom on the river table.
Can't use that word.
Yeah. But you could, I mean, you could play around with that idea for sure and like, you know, try some different things out. I don't know. It's, if you want it to be as shallow as possible, I think you're right. I would probably do it the second way that you're talking about.
Just almost like the way you would do a bar top. You just coat it and let it flow over. You're going to waste a lot of epoxy.
Just a bunch of flood coats.
Yeah.
Trying to think, okay, so what could potentially go wrong there?
What if the painter's pyramids float?
Yeah.
I could just screw those down. That's not a problem.
You would have to have a lot of buoyancy in order to. You would have to have like a lot of epoxy spilling over the side before it would lift up the painter's pyramids.
I do think it wouldn't be a bad idea to like tape the painter's pyramids down or like screw them down or staple them down or something though.
Yeah. Yeah. That's it. Because, they might move around on you a little bit.
Just get rid of any potential failure points. The table what?
I said the weight of your top isn't going to crush those pyramids, is it? Are they?
No, it's going to be a coffee table. So it'll be like 30 by 48 or 24 by 48. It shouldn't be that much.
They'll probably put some dents in the underside of your table. That's the kind of the pain in the ass thing about those painter's pyramids, but that's not the end of the world.
Nobody's going to look. I mean, if somebody's looking underneath your coffee table, that's a different story.
Yeah, yeah. And then you don't have to worry about accidentally screwing through one of the valleys or something like that.
Right.
Now,
right.
If you're wanting more depth, but you're not so much concerned about getting more width out of your pour, and you're doing the flood coating where you're just, you've got it on those painter's pyramids and you're running over the top anyways, build up sidewalls however high you want that depth to be, and then fill that in up till it overflows, and then you can take off those sidewalls, and now you've added depth of that pour, however thick you want it to be.
And then just basically do a final flood coat on the top that just kind of like makes the sides thinner of the epoxy. That's not a bad idea either.
Yeah. Yeah. You so if you did it the first way we were talking about, do you not trust yourself with like a track saw to cut it really close to the edge so that you got it as thick as you wanted it?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, not a bad idea.
You would have to be pretty precise, but I think you could do it. I mean, how what's your ideal thickness on the sides of epoxy?
I don't know. Like 1/8 inch or so.
Like 1/8 inch or so. Yeah.
But then I'm also running into the issue of like, oh, well, how do I make sure that there's not just a boatload of epoxy that gets on the bottom and that the bottom's now flat and doesn't have that like a weird pool of epoxy underneath it, like when people make tables where it like sneaks under the bottom. That's what I was like.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point.
The other thing that's going to be tough is I make a perfectly flat slab of wood, and then when I carve it, it's going to warp.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's almost like you have to use a little bit of a thickness of epoxy to take out, like, if you're potato chipping a little bit, like, maybe, you know, the underside of it has a little bit more epoxy on the outside than it does on the inside.
Yeah. How do you see, so I think we've talked about this before, but how do you think, before you even get to the pour stage, are you going to, like, seal this whole table with something?
I think I'll do like a real thin coat of epoxy. That way I don't get a bunch of bubbles.
Like just brush on.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. Like it's tricky because I think that's probably when a lot of your cupping or your curling is going to happen, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're going to do one side and you're going to have to let it sit there for a while and dry. And as it dries, it's going to pull.
Right.
And then you're going to go do the other side and maybe it pulls back, but maybe it doesn't.
But honestly, on a coffee table, if it potato chipped 1/8 of an inch and perfect. Then I'm flooding the top of it with epoxy, it's going to level itself out. You're never going to know unless you like look at a profile beat for you from the side and you're like, oh, it kind of smiley faces a little bit.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I'm just like, we're going through all the effort of trying to think this through. How could we ensure that it didn't potato chip?
C-channel? Epoxy C-channel into it.
Or attach C-channel to one side when you're epoxying. Like, how could you do it?
To be honest with you, I think I'm just going to live with the small amount of warping that's going to happen.
Okay.
And just as long as the table looks decent, that's the battle that's I'm happy with.
Good enough for YouTube, right?
Right. But no, do you think this will be an interesting video of like being like, listen, I made a video all about how I failed miserably and I want to redeem myself. I think people find that interesting.
I'm willing to fail again.
That's great.
Yeah. What do you, I'm willing to fail again.
I'm willing to fail, yeah. What do you think the title and thumbnail is for it?
It's going to be something along the lines of like, I lost $5,000 doing this before, but I'm going to try it again or something like that.
Okay. Yeah. I like that.
Redeeming myself on a $5,000 failure. Something like that.
Okay. Yeah. I like that. That's good.
So that's what's going through my head right now. So I know a lot of people are like, Eric, you haven't talked about what you're building. I'm like, I've been really busy, but this is the thing I'm thinking of. This is what I want to build next. So I want to ask, what wood should I make this out of?
What did you do for the first one? Was it like ash? It was something light, wasn't it?
It was red oak because I had a boatload of red oak I was trying to get rid of.
Okay. Well, I'm also in the I'm getting ready to build a coffee table for myself, and I'm thinking some sort of light wood. So I'm kind of going back and forth in my head between maple and white oak.
Ooh, yeah.
So
Do you think that a specific color of wood for this carved table is going to pronounce the...
Ooh, good question.
Like the carving more? Like, is if I use walnut and then soak it in epoxy, it's going to get moderately dark. Is that going to, like... Are you not going to see the grooves?
Yeah, yeah.
If you go with something like a bird's eye maple that's got some character to it, that's going to stand out.
That could be wild, too. Yeah.
What about this, Eric? What about this? Do it in walnut or something dark, and then get yourself some wood bleach and bleach through the grooves. And then that way, like, if you don't go too crazy with the wood bleach, it's not that strong. Like, you have to do multiple coats before it goes, like, really, really white. So you could, like, you know, work a little bit of texture into it where you have, like, the bottoms of it could be really white, and then you could kind of, like, just feather it out as you get towards the top.
That's not a bad idea.
What's the pattern that you're carving in it?
I have no idea. I'm probably going to make Miranda do it because she loves carving. So I'm just going to be like, here you go. Make your pattern. And so, like, go ahead.
Depending on how thick it is, you could go with, like, say, a couple different woods that are variations of the same color and laminate them. So as you're carving through, you expose different colors.
It's like a topographical map.
Why don't you just get the wood that's already like that, plywood?
I'd considered that. I did consider that. I don't know. Maybe I'll bring it up to management and see what she says.
Because
it's either going to be a purely creative project where, like, afterwards I just give it to somebody or, you know, whatever. Or it's going to stay in our, like, living room. And if so, like, I have that media console that's walnut. So it's like it would probably look nice to match with that, or it might look, I think white oak and walnut is a weird combo, but like maple and walnut, I think would look good. But does a solid maple table, is that too light?
Pretty light.
Yeah, maple can go a little yellow on you too.
Right.
Which you might not want, especially with, I don't know what you're using Total Boat for this, right?
Yeah. They're like Fathom. I'm probably going to use the Fathom because it would have the least chance of bubbles.
Do they have any sort of UV guarantee on their stuff that it won't yellow over time?
Kind of, but let's be real. Every epoxy is going to yellow over time. It's the nature of the material.
Yeah.
That's why I think the walnut actually might be the best choice, because if it does slightly yellow,
you won't even notice.
You're not gonna really notice.
Yeah, I might go that way too. What about
smoky tint?
Right.
Yeah. What about a walnut where you like did something to it? Like if you like gave it like a very light whitewash or something.
I'd considered that. Almost kind of like your idea of like the bleach.
Yeah, almost like the bleach. Just like get it a little bit away from its like natural color, and then I don't know.
Maybe I can find a bunch of like sapwood walnut, pick out boards that have a bunch of sapwood in them.
Yeah.
You
know, going back to the maple, if you went with maple, you know, it's very white. But then if you took your epoxy and you gave it like a smoky tint, and you poured that over it, the deeper it went, the darker it would be.
True, that's a good idea.
That's neat too. Almost add like a drop of like gray trans tin or something like that.
Yeah.
Maybe, I wonder if I could do like some samples and just screw around with it.
I would do, if you're going to do,
you could go lighter as you go higher.
Right. True.
If you're going to do what Derek says, definitely do some tests because the dyes in epoxy, some of them are like the most powerful thing in the world, and some of them don't do anything.
Right.
And the tests would be good video content on their own.
Yeah.
True.
I'll bring it up to management and see what she says, because that's ultimately the most important decision. You guys all know that.
Yeah, run it up the flagpole, see what happens.
Yeah. And I'm probably gonna get greeted with the, well, last time you ruined the table that I carve. But she always enjoys it. And she was talking about it this weekend. She's like, you know, I'd really like to build something with you again. So I was like, all right, this will be the perfect time.
Let's do it.
Well, I appreciate you guys helping me brainstorm the or these sorts of things. And
now, before we move on, what are you thinking for legs on this thing?
So, okay, I'm glad I did want to talk about that, but I forgot to bring it up. My initial response is, this is going to be a wild kind of table, right? Like, it's going to be like visually striking, like how people have seen. So the legs need to be very, very like laid back and tame.
Yeah.
I have a set of black, matte black, powder coated legs that are kind of like trapezoid-y shaped.
Okay.
I think something like that might work because it's simple. Yeah. It's not like too crazy. Yeah. And like the black will go with the walnut.
Yeah.
But it's not going to be like, you can't have like some wild base on it, like crazy joinery and stuff. Cause it's like, yeah, the top is weird though. You got to like have a very subdued base.
Yeah. 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 No, I think that would look good. That's why I was curious. I was wondering if you're going to do like a wood base or just go for nice, simple black metal.
And truthfully, there's going to be so much effort put into the tabletop that I'm going to be like, slap some legs on it. Let's call it a day.
Yes. Yeah, I know. I'm designing my coffee table right now. And it's like, it's the one with all the media stuff in it. Mm-hmm. I was like, okay, I had this plan for like an elaborate top for it. And then I was like, I'm going to have to make like the cabinet. And then I'm going to have to put these like gas struts in it. And I was like, how complex do I want to just make the inside of it just like an open box, or do I want to like have the inside have like compartments and sliding things and all that stuff? Sometimes you just want to get the project done and get the video out there, but we'll see.
Right. Have you considered making your coffee table build a multi-part video?
Maybe. I don't know. What do you think I just worry. You could probably get a lot of views on the first video, but would you get a lot of views on the second one?
I don't know. I don't think I've ever done a multi-part video that I recall.
I know, neither have I. I feel like people, when they come to YouTube, they want to like watch an entire thing. You know what I mean? I would be more apt to put out like a 40-minute video than 2 20s.
Yeah. But then you can get 2 ad reads. You can get 2 sponsor ad reads in there.
I know, right?
I wish I could, for the man.
I wish I could A/B test real life.
Well, I think if you're just doing a simple project straight to from beginning to end, and you know what you're gonna do along the route, one video is where you go. But if you're gonna be doing some experimentation, I say put that experimentation in its own video. Comes out before that kind of teases the main video, then you release the main video of the actual project.
Oh, okay. That's almost a better way to do it. Like, I would much rather do it that way, Derek, than do it sequentially where you're like, and you know, like leave on a cliffhanger. Because let's be honest, we can't, it's so much easier to do like a cliffhanger ending in a movie than it is in a building project.
Yeah.
Right. And let's be honest, I can barely get people to watch my videos as it is, let alone half-ass teasing a project that I just haven't had time to build yet. That's too funny. Well, speaking of half-assing things, should we half-ass our way over the after show?
Yeah, let's half-ass this outro and get out of here.
All right. Don't fly Air Canada and don't listen to the Green Suitors podcast.
Boom. See you next week, everybody.
Later.
Wait. Hold on. Everybody still listening? Don't leave. Uh-oh. There we go.
Got him.
Got him.
We'll see you at the after show.
See you, everybody.